Here it is!
From deep inside your radio.
So, ladies and gentlemen, let's understand this, if we may. The passengers prevented a disaster. So let's punish all passengers. That's as far as I understand it up to now. But, of course, there will be more details and more heads as time. What does time do? Anyway, we'll figure that out and report back to you on it. This is the last Le Show broadcast of the first decade of the 21st century. That sounds absurd, doesn't it? Just hearing it come out of my mouth like that. Imagine how I feel. Now stop that. So it is, in fact, time for part two of our yearly look back in Rancor at the events that have been essentially risible. And I don't even know if we'll look back at the decade. I don't know if I can find the decade. It's a lost decade already, and it isn't even over yet. But anyway, here we go with
The Year in Rebuke.
For our viewers, for anyone else who may be watching, you're in the Situation Room, happening now. The financial world looks at the administration's proposal to deal with toxic or troubled or legacy assets. Will it work? Joining us this hour in the Situation Room is one of the country's leading hedge fund managers, Clay Footings. Mr. Footings, welcome to the Situation Room.
Thank you, Wolf. Looks a lot like a TV studio.
It does, but it's really the Situation Room until 7, then it's Weather Central. Your hedge fund, Probability Partners, has been a leader in investing in securitized mortgages.
That's true, Wolf, although we've also taken very aggressive positions in mortgagized securities, so we've been fully hedged both ways. I can tell you, these days, that's a very good position to be in, no matter what the regulatory agencies might think.
And did the Obama administration consult you? Did the Treasury Secretary, Timothy Geithner, call you in to help work out this new plan for dealing with so-called trouble assets in so many financial institutions?
No, they didn't, Wolf. And to be honest, I wouldn't have gone in for those meetings in any case. All due respect to the administration, they got a tough job on their hands. But I owe it to my investors to maintain the independence of Probability Partners, especially since I'm the only one of the partners left at the business.
The other two are in hiding?
They're in transit, long term.
So with that in mind, when you heard Treasury Secretary Geithner unveil this latest plan for ridding the banks of difficult assets, how did you feel?
I felt good. A little swelling in my left ankle from tennis, but otherwise real good.
And how about the plan itself? Is your fund going to buy in? The federal government's picking up, as I understand it, about 97 cents of every dollar you might invest.
Between subsidies and loans, that's correct, Wolf, but I got to tell you, that other 3 cents really bothers me. See, here's what I don't understand. They're bashing us and people like us, or people who are just like us, for too much risk-taking.
Well, that's supposed to be one of the causes of the financial meltdown.
That's right. But now they want us to solve the problem by taking risks.
So you want, what, the federal government to assume the entire cost of you buying these assets?
Well, that would be a start. A federal investment of 100 cents on the dollar would mean that we could evaluate this purchase or these purchases free and clear of any extraneous concerns about putting our clients' funds in undue danger, since these are acknowledged to be questionable assets.
Well, I think they're officially regarded as troubled, not necessarily questionable.
Well, let's just call them piss poor and leave it at that, okay?
You said, Mr. Footings, that it would be a good idea, a good start for the government to pay your whole cost of buying these assets. Watch this tape.
No, Wolf, I just said it. I remember it clearly.
Okay. If that's just a start, in your mind, what more should the government do?
Well, obviously, Wolf, for us to evaluate and then purchase and hold these securities for possible later resale within, let's say, the next fiscal week, that would run up some costs for my operation and that of my partners.
Wherever they might be.
That's right. Those costs might weigh heavily on our desire to buy into this kind of plan.
You'd like the administration to cover the entire purchase price as well as your costs?
Let me make one thing clear, Wolf. This isn't about what I'd like. What I'd like is to be on an island in the South Pacific with 15 underage Eurasian girls. This is about what I think will work in this financial environment. But won't a lot of critics ask, then why shouldn't the government just buy the assets? Why do we need the private sector to be involved at all?
Because this is the stumbling block they've been running into for the last 6 months. They can't figure out what to pay for this stuff. If they pay too high a price, the taxpayers get stiffed. If they offer too low a price, the banks won't sell. You need people like me in there to put in bids that will establish a real market for these securities. That's a service we're performing. And last time I looked, in a free economy, you get paid for performing services.
So you don't think you're trying to take advantage of a difficult situation?
Wolf, I think I'm doing the country a favor by even being on this show talking about it.
Well, we're going to have Treasury Secretary Geithner on next hour. It'll be interesting to hear his reaction to your reaction.
Oh, is he going to be here?
No, he's at the White House in the real Situation Room. Clay Footings of Probability Partners, thanks for joining us in the Situation Room. Coming up, Jack's in the Cafferty file. He wants to know what you think of Anderson Cooper. Stay with us.
Well, you've seen our ads on your TV, and they always start with the big word free. 'Cause a credit report could have saved my skin, could have kept me from taking it right on the chin. You know, I thought my credit was A-OK. A free credit report would have saved the day. Now my girlfriend's out with another dude, and I'm left with my ex. Should have gone to freecreditreport.net. The reports aren't really free just yet. You'll be in for a big surprise, you bet, at freecreditreport.net. You know the website's cool and the offer's ace. The conditions never are right in your face. So you sign right up and it's not too long before you're paying me to sing this song. Now my girlfriend's back, 'cause I'm living the life, cutting my lobsters with a silver knife. You know the print's so fine and it's down so low. Who knew free could lead to so much dough? I'll see you at freecreditreport.net. You're better off at racetracks with a $2 bet. You'll be sorry we electronically met when you go to freecreditreport.net.
Offer applies when we say it does.
From the edge of America, from the home of the homeless, I'm Harry Shearer, welcoming you to this edition of the show. The Year in Rebuke continues with more about the economic thing we've been through. But first, this.
High def, low def, no def, take my hand. It's a digital wonderland. Got to be so careful where you stand in the digital wonderland.
Well, Brenda writes from Los Angeles, "Dear Harry, we live in Los Angeles and thought the transition to digital TV would really open up our TV experience with an always crisp picture and more channels to choose from." Yeah, and I thought Circuit City would be open today. Well, oh no, she continues, "Well, a lot of it depends on our cats. We'll have everything tuned in to watch The Simpsons until one of the cats goes upstairs. That's enough to throw everything off. So instead of relaxing, we're trying to convince the cat to come back downstairs with us so we can tune in a channel. And if both cats decide to go upstairs at the same time, forget it. Two moving targets are apparently too much for what should be a strong signal in a huge city. Sincerely, Brenda." Brenda, I just don't think cats like The Simpsons. Unlike the Vatican. And it's not just L.A. The quality of pictures broadcast on BBC's high-definition channel in Great Britain has been criticized by viewers who complain they are fuzzy and grainy. You remember those two little characters, fuzzy and grainy? The head of the channel says despite a series of tests, no technical fault can be found. Not all HD programs have the, quote, bright, crisp look, which for some is synonymous with AD, with HD, she now says. Really? Camera and production techniques all affect the overall quality, she added. Then there's this. The BBC replaced the encoders which process HD pictures in August of this year. The replacement encoders work at a bit rate of 9.7 megabits per second. The ones they replaced worked at 16 megabits per second, the standard for other broadcasters. In other words, they've halved the number of bits in your picture. Because they can do it. Because it's the digital wonderland. You couldn't do that in analog. See, that's why we made the switch. The BBC HD website describes HD as, quote, exceptionally clear, crisp pictures with vivid colors and up to five times more detail in standard definition, unquote. A spokesperson said, we did extensive testing on the new encoders, which showed that they could produce pictures at the same or even better quality than the old encoders at the higher bit rate. The controller of the BBC's HD channel said, there's not a major issue with picture quality. She says they've received only one formal complaint. The majority of those leaving comments on her blog disagreed. Even my wife can see a reduction in picture quality, and she's got cataracts, said one. News from the digital wonderland, ladies and gentlemen. It is a digital wonderland, and it is a copyrighted feature of this very broadcast. As is
the year in rebuke.
Direct from the virtual training floor of Corium Slocum Oliver, this is Mind Your Own Business. I'm Mike Cuccinello at the virtual training floor. Once again, this week's economic news was grim enough to make TV pitchman Billy Mays lose his enthusiasm. Jobs continued to be shed like so many excess python skins. Profits tumbled like Olympic gymnasts. Bankers were called on the congressional carpet, and Wall Street greeted the latest bank rescue plan with a yawn, cleverly disguised as a 300-point drop. Congress finally disgorged a stimulus bill, with Republicans strategically poised to say, I told you so, if it fails. The economy is sputtering like a sentence running out of figures of speech. And the airwaves are full of arguments about whether FDR cured or caused the Great Depression. We've had almost three-quarters of a century to settle that question. You have to wonder why it's coming up now. In such a climate, the savvy investor has to wonder whether, in fact, there is such a thing as a savvy investor. Right now, fear has banished greed to the sidelines, maybe even to the locker room. Anything printed on paper, whether stocks or bonds or currencies, looks like a foolish gamble, and even gold may seem risky. The savvy investor might be well advised to put half his money under the mattress and the other half in mattress stocks. This week brought news of a controversial bankruptcy by a controversial company. And over at the Money Honey Desk, Sylvia Meal Argent has the exclusive interview with the man who's turned it up to Chapter 11.
Thanks, Mike. Until this week, Continental Peanut was the nation's largest supplier of dried peanut solids. Now, after a health scare, in which several people died after having the health scared completely out of them, those solids have run out of liquidity. CP has gone into receivership, and its controversial founder, L.J. Pete Tanfran, is with me today. Pete, what happened? As recently as 2006, Consolidated Peanut was one of the high flyers in the super-hot peanut sector.
Well, it's true, Sylvia. Our stock went up more than 250% in the 2 years since the big peanut merger that brought United Peanut and American Peanut under one corporate roof.
Well, that's the merger that earned you the cover of Business Week as King Nut.
Yes, those were indeed the days. And I'm sure you're going to ask me what happened.
I'm going to ask you what changed.
Okay, close enough. Three words, Sylvia. Too much regulation.
Pete, if I'm not mistaken, Continental Peanut was, for a considerable amount of time, selling dried peanut solids contaminated with salmonella. Isn't that a sign of not enough regulation?
It is, if the only place you get your information is from the bug police. You know, contaminated is a pretty strong word. Admittedly, there were traces of salmonella, among other things, in those shipments.
What did those other things include? Listeriosis and Legionnaire's disease?
Look, bottom line, there was a lot more than just peanuts in those solids, okay? But, you know, it's like saying when you put chocolate nibs in coffee ice cream, that's a contaminant.
Pete, there were deaths among people who ate products laced with your solids.
There were, very regrettably, Sylvia, no argument. And do you know why there were some deaths? Because the bug police had prevented people from being able to develop salmonella resistance over the past few decades. What we were doing in our own small way was trying to return some degree of antibodies to the American public. And, you know, we were making a profit while doing that, and that's what the bug police just couldn't stand.
Pete, you're saying that salmonella in the peanuts was supposed to be good for people?
I'm saying you can't live in a microbe-free world, Sylvia. Folks enjoyed our product, and their immune systems got stronger. That was win-win, except for those few who were victims of the bug police. They're the ones who, by the way, should be in Chapter 11.
The victims?
The regulators, after all. These bacteria don't hurt the salmon.
They were named after a Dr. Salmon.
Did it kill him?
Apparently not.
And that drives the bug police crazy.
Pete, that would seem to take care of the past. Where does the company go looking forward?
Well, Sylvia, our business plan was sound, providing a delicious product to the food industry while shaving unnecessary so-called sanitation costs. Now, clearly the bug cops have crippled our ability to carry forward that business model in the peanut space. So we're reorganizing, locating new funding, and we plan to emerge from bankruptcy later this year as Consolidated Pecan.
So you can keep the same logo.
That's right. You know, cost saving starts at home, especially in these times.
Pete Tanfran, thanks for stopping by the virtual trading floor today. Mike?
And for today, that's Mind Your Own Business for this week. Tomorrow, why the bad bank could be a good neighbor. Till then, from the virtual trading floor of Corium Salcom Oliver, I'm Mike Cuccinello saying, this week, mind the business of someone you love. So long.
I'm Bill Curtis. I was never as big a deal at CBS News as Dan Rather. But now I'm avoiding his slow, sad decline. And I'm doing it on the Internet.
5 minutes, Bill.
Here in my trailer, I'm downloading audition scripts for even more commercials I might do, thanks to this Laptop Connect card. Here on the test track, while they're strapping me into this sports car, I'm uploading my highlight reel to my commercial agent. And here on the tennis court, while Andy Roddick gets final touch-ups, I'm touching up my resume. All with the aid of the fastest 3G network ever endorsed by a former newsman. I'm Bill Curtis. I'm flushing away what's left of my credibility. And I'm doing it faster than Dan Rather. On the Internet.
One of the stories that caught my eye about the economic meltdown this year was a piece in the New York Times about the lengths to which some people were going to kind of cut back, slim down the lifestyle. And it related the experience of a number of different people reported on across the country in both suburban and rural, well, mainly suburban areas. Rural is no surprise, but suburban and urban areas raising backyard chickens for food. Chickens in their backyard, because that way they wouldn't have to go to the store as much and pay the people at the store. And the Times story reported that a lot of these folks bought the chickens. We're buying the chickens now at the same place that they bought their guns. Gun and ammo stores were now diversifying their product range to include chickens to be raised in the backyard.
Got laid off. There's no other jobs. Could have earned a buck. Joined some local mobs. Wife just said, we need to self-sustain. Went down to the feed store, trying to ease the pain. Well, I saw some chicks there, guns and ammo too. You You know, I liked the combo, liked what each could do. See, one could fight the hunger, one could fight the fear. 20 chicks, no roosters, 7 rifles in the rear. Buying some guns and backyard chickens, the heart leaps, the pulse rate quickens. Surviving through the bad times ain't so hard. We're staying safe, keeping on eating, that's going forward, not retreating. We've been knocked down, Lord knows we've been scarred. So lock and load some hens in your backyard. Wife feeds the chickens, I feed the 22. We both have our duties, both have jobs to do. She collects the eggs, I enforce the sign that says don't even think of crossing our property line. Our little girls cry on chicken killing day, but they're learning food don't come from no plastic tray. With all that we've been through, it's such a relief to start the day with omelets armed to the teeth. We're buying up guns and backyard chickens, tasty as hell, scary as the dickens. Don't want no ID number, don't want to show no card. Not a UFO nut, not a birther, not a specter or a murther. Just want to live where aliens are barred. With some rifles and chickens here in my backyard. Now my weapon is heavy, but I can lug it. Don't have to pay for no McNugget. We're not street and we're not boulevard. Just us and rifles and chickens in our backyard.
The advent of the Obama administration, of course, an administration that came to office proclaiming hope and change, the advent was accompanied by the announcement that Guantanamo Bay, the United States prison, at that naval base on the island of Cuba, would be closed within the year. That deadline has slipped. It's now clear. And as the year went on, it became clear that other parts of Bush administration policy regarding terrorism and detainees were not going to be changed. Chief among them was the policy of sending detainees to other countries where quite frequently they were interrogated with techniques even more enhanced than those that Dick Cheney proposed and propounded for this country. You know, countries like Egypt, other places where perhaps the Miranda rights didn't apply at all. A practice we're continuing, known as extraordinary rendition.
By night, he swings.
This time, the lady wears the pants.
By day, he spies.
Is your name Mahmoud Al-Mahdi?
Mohammed Al-Mahdi.
That's close enough. By night.
Thank you. Thank you very much. This one by the great Jimmy Webb.
Or by day.
But I just run an off-track betting shop.
Sure. I'm betting. You'll have a nice trip.
He's got only one way. Extraordinary rendition. Sean Paul Farrell is Jack Limerick. Cheech Marin is the Arab.
Limerick, you cannot leave me here. They torture people here.
They swear they don't. Somehow, I believe them.
Uma Thurman is the handler.
Jack, I get so hot when you sing. Can I come back tomorrow night?
Sure, Tiger. But just one thing.
What's that?
Don't let me buy your ticket.
What?
If I do, certain restrictions apply.
This January, singing and kidnapping have a new name. Extraordinary Rendition. Everything else is just ordinary. From Birthmark Pictures, only in theaters until it's not.
And of course, there was criticism from the liberal side of the aisle at the news that the administration was continuing this policy. Reaction inside the White House coming up here on the show in The Year in Rebuke.
Father knows best.
Well, good morning, Michelle. Muesli looks good.
Mm-hmm. Made it myself.
Well, you know, they'll do anything around here to make you happy, honey.
Mm-hmm. Except learn how to make muesli.
Well, be a little understanding. They have spent 8 years of breakfast making omelet fritters.
Well, I'm just trying to make a decision here.
The sleeveless or the three-quarter sleeveless?
You know, I did get a higher score in my LSATs than a certain first black president I could mention. But look here, I'm trying to decide whether or not to accept this TV offer.
Well, they want you to take Miss California's crown away from her?
They want me to appear as me on a Family Guy special.
Oh, that's that cartoon show.
Mm-hmm. It's an hour-long special. The Family Guy Goes to Bangkok.
Well, I'd lean on the side of... I'll think about it. But, you know, honey, that's what we've got advisors for.
Daddy, did you just turn into, like, George Bush?
Oh, hey, Malia, somebody got up on the wrong side of 10 years old this morning.
Dad, I'm serious. Everybody at school is saying you bit the big weenie, whatever that means.
Well, now, Malia, baby, whatever it means, you pay no attention to what everybody at school says. My... You're the president's daughter. And you're just like everybody else.
Mom, they're saying Daddy did a 180. Is that like a dating type thing?
It's not physically possible, honey. Now, look, darling. I know that what your friends at school say can hurt sometimes. So let's try to help Mommy for a moment. Do we think she should go on Family Guy as herself?
Daddy, if you really went back on your campaign rhetoric... She'll be lucky to be invited on American Dad.
Look, sweetie, you're right. Daddy did say something different during the campaign about military commissions. And Daddy did say we'd release those torture photos before we decided to not release them.
Barack, are you sure you want to do this?
Malia, have you learned in school what the word pragmatism means?
Yeah.
Good.
It means biting the big weenie.
Bo, get back in here.
Hi, Uncle Ron.
Hi, Malia.
Bo.
Oh, that's okay. He can come in.
You won't say that when you see what he did in there.
Rami, did Bo poop in the Jefferson study?
Well, let's just say Jefferson won't be studying in there today.
Bad dog. Bad doggy.
Now, Malia, what do you think we should do with such a bad dog?
Punish him.
Should we... read him his Miranda rights?
No.
Should we release photographs of Michelle bopping him on the nose?
Don't you dare say yes, young lady.
No.
Well, should we water hose him?
Maybe. He doesn't like that.
Well, that could remind him that we don't like this.
Ooh.
Oh, it's just a little bow poop. But maybe my little girl has learned something about doggies. And detainees.
Things look different once you're in the White House, don't they, Daddy?
They sure do, darling. They sure do. Well, Michelle, honey, you look like you just got a brainstorm.
I sure did.
Oh.
I decided to hold out for a regular episode of Family Guy.
Rami?
Yes, sir.
You know, if you got to be surrounded by girls, make sure you're surrounded by smart ones.
Yes, sir.
This is Le Show, and now, the apologies of the week.
We're so sorry.
First, we can hope that this is the last we hear of this guy.
I do want to reiterate, I'm very, very sorry. And I want to apologize to all the rescue workers out there and the people that got involved in the community. That's it.
That's Richard Heaney, Mr. Balloon Boy, on his way to 90 days in jail. And hopefully obscurity. Let's hope that a year from now, only people on quiz shows will remember the name Heaney. And then there's Dylan Radigan of MSNBC.
The way I conducted the interview has been called many things, but I'll sum it up with a tweet from a woman known only as Diane G12. And I quote, "Dylan was very rude. And yes, Diane G12, I was. And I want to apologize to the Congresswoman and to our viewers for that. Our mission and my mission on this show is to shine the light on what is really happening, whether it's health care, the banks, or a war in the Middle East. And the way I went about that on Friday was a disservice to our viewers because it got in the way of doing just that. I have some work to do, and as we go into the new year and our new 4 p.m. time slot, we will continue to hold our nation's leaders accountable, and I will do everything I can do to do that in an informative, factual, understandable, and enlightening way."
Dylan, also try to remember you have a microphone on. You don't have to yell. Deadline Washington, Senator he was interviewing Florida Congresswoman Debbie Wasserman Schultz. That's what he was apologizing about, was his conduct in that interview. Deadline Washington Senator Chuck Schumer apologized this week after word got out that he called a flight attendant a bitch for ordering him to follow the rules and turn off his cell phone before takeoff. This is before yesterday. Imagine what's going to happen now. Schumer's outburst was overheard aboard a U.S. Airways flight from LaGuardia to Washington last Sunday. Schumer and his seatmate, Senator Kirsten Gillibrand, were chatting on their cell phones when the plane's captain told passengers to turn them off, but the two Democratic senators ignored the order and kept talking, prompting a flight attendant to ask them to follow FAA rules. According to a House Republican aide who was seated nearby, Schumer asked if he could finish the call. The attendant said no, because the plane was waiting for him to finish so it could take off. The state senior senator ended his call, but then launched into an argument with the flight attendant, claiming he was entitled to continue his chat until the cabin door was closed. Bitch, Schumer remarked to Gillibrand after the attendant walked away. Gillibrand. Gillibrand's office initially gave Schumer cover, telling Politico.com the senior senator was polite and that he turned off his phone when asked to. Other flight personnel said Schumer has a reputation. "He's not nice," said a flight attendant who has served the senator before. Greyhound Bus Lines is offering free travel vouchers. Ouch! To passengers who were stranded for about 3 hours in West Virginia on a bus with no heat. A bus driver abandoned 45 passengers in Charleston, West Virginia, around 8 p.m. Monday after telling them another driver would arrive within the hour to drive them on to Columbus, Ohio, and Detroit. Greyhound spokesperson Timothy Stokes says the bus wasn't scheduled to arrive in Charleston from Charlotte, North Carolina, until 11 p.m. That's the time the bus station reopened and the new driver arrived. Greyhound plans to conduct an internal investigation into the incident, which it called unacceptable. The way I'm reading this, that means the bus arrived 3 hours early. I would say that's unacceptable. That's so un-Greyhound-ish. Greyhound apologized for the inconvenience and said it would offer free travel vouchers to the passengers so they could ride Greyhound some more. Japanese Prime Minister Yukio Hatoyama has apologized to the public over a political fund scandal. He says he will not resign after two former close aides were charged with falsifying political funding records. I would like to express my sincere apology to the Japanese people. I would also like to start afresh and make the lives of the Japanese people my priority. I will do my best and work myself to the bone in order to fulfill my responsibility. It's going to work to the bone, ladies and gentlemen. We'll keep an eye on that for you. Former President Jimmy Carter apologized for any words or deeds that may have upset the Jewish community in an open letter meant to improve an often tense relationship. He said he was offering a prayer signifying a plea for forgiveness. We must not permit criticisms for improvement to stigmatize Israel, Carter said in the letter, which was sent to the Jewish wire service. As I would have noted at Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, but which is appropriate at any time of the year, I offer a prayer for any words or deeds of mine that may have offended or stigmatized. Dateline Santa Rosa, California. The top official in California's Sonoma County has rescinded a ban on stars and angels on Christmas trees in county buildings. Following a barrage of criticism, Administrator Chris Thomas this week reversed his order banning the ornaments 2 days earlier. He apologized in an email to employees for any inconvenience and disruption. Thomas's ban order was prompted by a complaint from Santa Rosa resident Irv Sutley, who says the county should not show favoritism to any religion. The county attorney had said the county risked a lawsuit even if the ornaments were legal. Local church leaders had spoken out against the ban. At least one county employee openly defied the order. Stars and angels in Santa Rosa. Two additional Irish bishops offered their resignations Friday to Pope Benedict the 16th in relation to a church child sex abuse scandal that has rocked Ireland. Yes, Ireland rocks. Auxiliary bishops of Dublin, Eamon Walsh and Raymond Field, issued a statement that they had informed the archbishop they would leave their positions. Also the bishoprics. Four bishops have now resigned after a report released last month by the Dublin Archdiocese found that Roman Catholic authorities concealed child abuse by priests for 3 decades. It is our hope that our action may help to bring the peace and reconciliation of Jesus Christ to the victims, survivors of child sexual abuse. We again apologize to them, said Walsh and Field in their statement. A Toronto 18 recruit and a terror plot labeled the Battle of Toronto planned to bomb the Toronto Stock Exchange and a military base apologized this week for betraying his fellow Canadians. Appealing for leniency at a pre-sentencing hearing, Saad Gaya, 22 years old, said, "What I was a part of was absolutely wrong. Not only have I let myself down, but I've also let down everyone with whom I've ever been associated," he said. Apologizing for my irrational decision, he told the judge in the case, "I should have realized I was playing with fire. I was young and politically naive." No, he wasn't an Obama voter. He was a terrorist. Fairview, New Jersey Police Chief John Pinzone formally apologized this week to borough residents, members of the department, and the mayor and council of Fairview, New Jersey, for going to bat for a convicted mobster whose daughter he's dating. Pinzone had written a letter of support to a federal judge who sent mobster Giovanni DiMaio to prison for having a handgun equipped with a silencer, even though he's a convicted cocaine trafficker and counterfeiter. In doing so, Assistant U.S. Attorney Lisa Colon said, Pinzone insulted the very people he's sworn to protect. His letter to the judge omitted the fact that he's been dating DiMaio's 33-year-old daughter, Angela, the past couple of years. So I apologize to the citizens of Fairview and the members of the police department. It's with regret that this has occurred, he said in his letter. It's New Jersey. I know it sounds like it could be New Orleans. It's New Jersey. The editors of Jewish in St. Louis, the website of the Jewish Federation of St. Louis, apologized this week for the use of the term Chrismukka in the subject line of an electronic newsletter it sent out, calling it an unfortunate lapse in judgment which was offensive and troubling to many of our readers. Said it referred to the blended celebrations of Hanukkah and Christmas, but apologized. And finally, the Vancouver Symphony Orchestra has resolved a dispute with the Vancouver Organizing Committee of the Olympics. The orchestra was threatening to withhold its name from being associated with the Games. Last week, the committee organizing the 2010 Games in Vancouver, known as VANOC, found itself in conflict with the orchestra after its longtime music director, Bramwell Tovey, refused to record music that would be used in the opening ceremony February 12th. Tovey said he was asked to conduct the orchestra during recording sessions, but that another conductor would mime his performance during the actual ceremony, adding, quote, "I regarded that as fraudulent," and withdrew. The orchestra will not contribute to the opening ceremony, but will perform in the Cultural Olympiad that takes place during the Games. The organizing committee apologized for putting the orchestra, quote, "in an untenable position." The Apologies of the Week, ladies and gentlemen, a copyrighted feature of this broadcast. This August, some of us marked the 35th anniversary of the resignation of Richard Nixon from the presidency. Some of us marked it here on Earth. Others marked it wherever they may now be.
Knock, knock.
Well, you know, it's a cloud, Haldeman. You can just come right in.
I know that, sir. He just seemed busy, lost in thought or something.
Of course, I'm lost in thought. Where else would I be?
No,
I'm not in the arena, am I?
No.
I'm in goddamn heaven.
Well, you've been doing well at keeping busy this last...
No, I mean...
A few decades.
Of course. You know, back on the planet, you mean?
Mm-hmm. Well, there and here, I think.
Say, after all this time, you still think you can BS the old man?
No, it's just...
The Jews thought that too, you know.
No, some of them didn't.
Oh, what, Kissinger? Is that what you mean, Kissinger?
Well,
he was the biggest BSer of them all, you know? Peace with honor. That was his, wasn't it?
Well, I actually think it came from National Security Council.
From what?
National Security Council.
NSC? Yeah, well, sure, but...
but... No, whole interagency process at work there, I think.
No, but it was Henry's baby. Take it from me, Alderman. Peace with honor was all his. I mean, I had to take the rap for it for long enough. I should know whose damn fingerprints were all over it.
I suppose you should.
Yep.
Just wanted to see how you were doing this particular week.
Mm-hmm. We ever clear up that thing?
The what thing? I mean...
No, I know there were a whole lot of little things, but...
I did take care of making sure Hoover stays in a whole other county.
You did?
Mm-hmm.
Well, good. That's good. That's good.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. That's good.
I mean, they're not really counties up here, but...
No, I know. No, for Canadians.
I mean, I can't even pronounce the Hebrew word they use for it.
No, of course not. Mm-hmm. All the K's and the C-H's and so forth.
Sounds like I'm gargling when I try
mean,
to...
that language wasn't made for the Christian mouth, of course.
Well, no, predates Christianity, for one thing.
For one thing?
Mm-hmm.
See, but even so, it's been, it's been long enough, you'd think that...
But from what I've seen, I think they're pretty impervious to change up here.
No, I know, but you think with all the Christians who've gotten in.
No.
Yeah. Including, of course, you know who.
Yeah. Well, but he was Jewish.
Well, if you want to believe...
No, I mean, you know, you can...
Kissinger told you that, didn't he?
Yeah.
See, that's what I mean. Yeah. He'll say anything.
Well, anyway, that thing...
Yeah.
Which...
Parking thing.
Mm-hmm.
Say, how can they get parking tickets up here? I mean, there aren't any curbs. You know, you're supposed to be, a mind reader and know that this part of the cloud is cleaned on Tuesday morning?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, their position was that there were signs.
Uh-huh. Yeah, well, but I didn't see any signs, mm-hmm. You see. Mm-hmm. Must have been, lost in the mist or something.
Yeah. So they were pretty big. I didn't see them myself.
Well, see... That's what I...
I mean, I didn't actually go down there.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Yeah.
So who...
I had one of the Cubans actually go down there and look.
We're still using the Cubans?
Mm-hmm.
After all the screw-ups?
Yep.
I mean, you know...
No, I...
Yes, mistakes were made in our part of the operations.
Mm-hmm. I think
but,
we...
It's still, to me, to me, it still comes down to the Cubans.
Yeah. So you've been...
It's the goddamn Cubans.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
See?
Yeah.
You know, I had a Filipino valet.
Oh, Manolo.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
That's right.
Yeah.
Manolo.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, see, my point is, just why didn't we just recruit some Filipinos for the break-ins?
Mm.
See?
So, you've been thinking about the anniversary?
Hmm. Well... I mean, you can't help it, can you?
No, of course not.
No.
Yeah, seems so long ago.
Well, I mean, I told her not to marry the boy in the first place.
I didn't mean that anniversary.
You know, I said, mm-hmm. Of course, yeah, he's an Eisenhower, but you can do better.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
you know.
But the anniversary I had in mind was the 35th.
Yeah. The little thing.
Yep.
Yeah, the anniversary. Well, of course, seldom, and it seems just like yesterday.
Oh, yeah.
Especially since we've gotten here. Time just... What's the cliche?
Seems to stand still.
Right. Yeah, of course. If it wasn't so damn boring, you know, it might seem to move, don't you think?
Well, you know, there are the concerts.
Oh, I know. Yeah. That's fine for the Kennedy crowd, of course, and so forth. I mean...
And the museums.
No, I know. Don't get me wrong. Mm-hmm. It's a fine habit. Mm-hmm. No question about it, but, you know. Me, I just miss the action, you know.
Yeah.
Just one liberal think tank to fire bomb. I mean, just one.
I agree. It's a little calm.
Just some psychiatrist's office to bug, you know. Mm-hmm. Just to get the juices flowing.
Yeah, I don't think that's part of the program.
Well, of course it isn't. I mean, it's the whole damn idea that, you know, you've done all that.
Right.
You know, it's supposed to be time to relax and, you know, whatever people do when they relax.
That's right.
I mean, it's not as if we haven't tried.
No. You know, we've discussed,
That's right. Mm-hmm. I mean, dozens of plans.
Yeah, dozens of plans.
Yeah. But see, that's the thing about being deceased. See, all of it. Mm-hmm. Our hands are tied.
Well, not totally.
I mean,
it's just that all of our old contacts down there are now either up here or, really down there.
That's right. Mm-hmm. Well, you see, whenever we get any new blood up here, I mean, they're as bad as we are.
You think so? I thought they tightened up the rules after...
No, I don't mean...
After we got in.
No, I mean as bad at getting things done.
Yeah.
See?
Yeah. That's true.
Even if you're not including the Cubans.
Oh, no, they're worse.
At getting things done.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, no. Not wallowing in anniversary thinking.
No.
I mean, you know, what's the point? Mm-hmm. You know, they keep talking about letting us go back in time, but...
I don't think they've perfected the...
I know, but I mean, we've been on the list for...
Last time I heard, the software was still buggy.
I mean, you said we were first on the list, you know. Former president,
no. No, I did, and... They're debugging the software, and...
Well, you know, if they need something bugged... Mm-hmm. That's one thing our people can still do, isn't it?
They can, but...
Well, so why not get them on it? I mean, we don't have all the time in the world, Alderman.
Well, in fact, sir, I think we do.
No, I know. Just a figure of speech, but...
I could get some people to...
Just bug it, you know, whatever the hell it is. Mm-hmm. I mean, the software you said,
yes,
bug
sir.
The hell out of it.
Yeah. Well, we're gonna...
Bug
sir.
The crap out of it.
No, I'll call some of the people over there.
I mean, you know, hold on.
Mm-hmm.
This time, we really could use Filipinos.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, screw the Cubans.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I thought just because I was eating right and getting plenty of exercise, my mind and body would retain their youthful vigor and innocence. But then my doctor told me I was getting age-related skepticemia, a chronic inability to absorb and believe messages about products that might be able to help me. What's more, he said it gets worse as I get older. That's when he told me about once-a-month Believia. He said it reestablishes brain pathways that aid in credulity. And unlike other medications which have to be taken daily, Believia does its work with just one pill a month. I can handle that.
Do not use or handle Bolivia if you're operating machinery, becoming pregnant, or operating pregnancy machinery. Common side effects include headache, dizziness, memory loss, temporary night blindness, and chronic gullibility. Ask your doctor if Bolivia is right for you, and believe him.
I have this one life to live, and I don't want to miss any products that could help make that life stronger, better, or just more expensive. That's why I'm relying on once-a-month Bolivia, so the message gets through.
We're in New York City tonight, where I'll be hosting an all-star tribute to cosmetic surgery for the benefit of the Olivia Foundation, which provides elective surgeries for dysmorphic women in third world countries. That's Radio City this coming Wednesday. Tonight, two old friends of Larry King Live back with us to talk about their new partnership. If you think you've seen The Odd Couple, wait till you see these two together. Here in our New York studio, the Reverend Al Sharpton, and in our Washington bureau, the former Speaker of the House, Newt Gingrich. Mr. Speaker, welcome back.
Thanks, Larry. And I just want to point out to your viewers that one of the delicious ironies of this partnership is that of the two of us, I'm the one who hasn't run for president.
And I'm the one who hasn't put on weight.
Oh, you've lost weight. You look good.
I feel good, Larry. I feel better than Tawana Brawley on a wedding night.
Mr. Speaker, how did this partnership come about? This wasn't a case of the two of you running into each other at an airport, was it?
That's a good question, Larry.
Because that's how my wife, Sean, first got involved with Jermaine Jackson.
Even better.
Which, of course, they're not anymore.
Got it. What was the question?
Larry, Newt and I are both represented for certain types of speaking appearances by the same agency. And it was a representative of that organization who first suggested that we do a speaking tour together.
Sort of like Timothy Leary and G. Gordon Liddy.
Yes, except that neither of us is a convicted felon.
Okay, but the general idea is strange bedfellows.
Yeah, that's right, Larry. Yeah. And then Newt and I got to talking, and before long we'd run out of things to talk about, and that's when the subject of education reform first came up.
Larry, do you realize that if you even have the slightest appreciation for what Deming and Drucker did to revolutionize management techniques, the American education system is an unmitigated disaster. Mm. And so before we can have a revolution in the classroom, we just absolutely have to have a revolution in the administration building.
And you see, Larry, this is where you can capture the differences in our backgrounds. Because at no school that I ever went to did they even have a whole administration building. So what we're doing is we're bringing together two different perspectives of a man who has stood at press conferences with Michael Jackson and a man who has stood in press conferences with Dick Armey. Yeah. This is really all about bridging differences and not about differentiating bridges.
Well, of course, the teacher's job is one of the hardest in all of show business, which is to prevent revolution in the classroom, isn't it?
You know, it is. But, you know, Larry, and this is the fascinating thing. 20 years ago, Toffler said that in the future, the classroom will be more like a laboratory and vice versa. We're still not there yet.
The same thing they do now with the auditorium and the cafeteria.
That's right. And what Reverend Sharpton and I hope to bring to the table in our partnership is a shared conviction of the importance going forward of shared convictions within the context of a choice-centered matrix.
Reverend Sharpton, did you understand what your partner just said?
Larry, the speaker and I both believe that schools are just buildings. They're just bricks.
Except in California. You can't build with bricks out there.
Okay, but you can't reform the schools without reforming the people in the schools. That's why it's going to take a partnership between the right and the left, between a man who ran for president and a man who may be running for president, to build a nationwide consensus to at least come and hear what we've got to say in not like a town hall setting, but in, you know, something with reserved seating.
Yeah. Now, it says in your website, Mr. Speaker, that the two of you are taking this thing to Atlanta, Baltimore, and New Orleans. Why not New York? Why not Los Angeles? Best pastrami in the world at Nathan Allen's.
I have heard you saying that before, Larry, and I believe
it. No, you can ask Sean. She hears me say it all the time.
But those are just the first stops. Mm. And by the way, Reverend Sharpton and I, and the Secretary of Education, who's also lent his name to this effort, won't just be speaking. It's not just a speaking tour.
It's not going to be like a Hillary Clinton listening tour, is it? used to criticize that.
Nice try, Larry, but no, this is not a Hillary-style listening tour.
Okay.
We are, however, going to be signing at the end of every appearance, and that gives us a chance to get feedback from people who care enough about solving this problem to buy one of our books.
And it could be either one of our books, Larry. I mean, I'll sign his books. Yeah. That's how tight we're getting with this thing.
Reverend, the Bush administration had its education reform with No Child Left Behind. Mm-hmm. What do you, Speaker Gingrich, want to accomplish with your reform?
Larry, I think what we're looking for might best be described as all children left ahead.
Larry, in fairness, we don't know the full dimensions of what that means yet.
But we do know that it can motivate a lot of folks to get up out of their easy chairs, turn off their TVs, and come out and get involved in the process of seeing us.
Mr. Speaker, just before we go, because Anderson Cooper's got a special series tonight on child prostitution in East St. Louis, Illinois, if you hadn't run into Reverend Sharpton in the airport, and I know this is a hypocritical question, who would you have wanted to partner with for this project?
Larry, I think if I hadn't had that chance encounter with a good reverend, I might well have just concentrated on promoting the futurist conservative agenda.
And the reverend mentioned you might be running for president in 2012. Do you think your association with Al Sharpton might hurt your approval rating with the conservative Republican base?
Well, now, Larry, there are a few things more important than pandering to your base and the ability to completely re-engineer not only the optics, but also the metrics of the dysfunctional public school system in this country is just an opportunity that's too attractive to pass up.
Also, he is planning to airbrush me out of all the pictures on his website.
You're kidding, but he's going to do it. Speaker Newt Gingrich and Reverend Al Sharpton, wish we had more time. There's so much more I'd like to think about asking you. Tomorrow, for the full hour, Michael Jackson's Doctor's Nurse. Till then, from New York, good night. Ladies and gentlemen, there's so much more of the year we didn't have time for. Guess we'll just have to flush it and forget it. And open up a brand new one next week on the next edition of the show, which returns at the same time over these same stations, NPR worldwide throughout Europe, the USN 440 cable system in Japan, around the world through the facilities of the American Forces Network, up and down the east coast of North America. By the shortwave giant WBCQ, the planet 7.415 megahertz shortwave, on the mighty 104 in Berlin, around the world via the internet at two different locations, live and archived whenever you want it, harryshearer.com and kcrw.com, on your smartphone via stitcher.com, available as a free download to members at audible.com/theshow, and available as a free podcast at kcrw.com. And be just like everything changing. It'd be just like us having to stand in line for a full hour to get on a plane if you'd agree to join it with me then. Would you already? Thank you very much. A tip of the show chapeau, I say, to the San Diego, Pittsburgh, Chicago, and Honolulu desks. And thanks, as always, to Pam Halstead. The email address for this broadcast and the playlist of music heard here on when there's music heard here on, just part of the panoply of features at harryshearer.com. And this show is on, the show is on Twitter at LeTwits. Adding followers every day. Don't be left out. The show comes to you from Century of Progress Productions and originates through the facilities of KCRW Santa Monica, a community recognized around the world as the home of the homeless. Happy New Year. And so long from Santa Monica.